Intro-tilbud hos Vordingborg Køkkenet. Spar 50% på vores helt nye Frame køkkenserie. Vordingborg Køkkenet. Luksus alle har råd til.
Like, yeah, so, the eyebrow is down.
Like I think when I when I wrote you on Facebook, like trying to find the thing, and it took me way too long to discover. All right,
like, I know
how to do a slash over the E, but how the
you have to hold shift.
And it's Delrive, is it? Like
Delrive,
Delrive.
Yeah, it's French.
Delrive.
Delrive.
Avec moi, ce soir. Fuck it, let's get into it. Welcome to Never AFK, a podcast about gaming in English today, and for the first time ever in English in our studio, which means that our listeners can finally have an English-speaking episode with proper sound. Because normally when we do English episodes, it's because I've been out and about in the world somewhere, and all of a sudden going, ooh, I need to interview these guys. And I have my phone, which is bad. So here we are. Very, very welcome to Aldrig FK, the podcast. I've already said that stuff. Today I have, how do you say usedvanlig in English?
Unusual.
Today I have unusually good company here in the studio. Very welcome, Mr. Ryan Wright and Madame Marlene Delrive.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Now, I have been looking very much forward to getting you guys in the studio today. It started out with you, Marlene, putting out a Facebook post.
Yes.
About your new game having won an award.
Well, it hasn't won yet.
Oh, it's been.
It's been nominated.
God damn it! I'm fucked it up already. It's been nominated for an award.
Yeah.
And a listener of mine, shout out to Mr. Thor Boding.
Yeah.
Made us get in touch, and I read the nomination. So let's start off with you guys are video game developer students.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
What's the school you go to?
We both go to the IT University of Copenhagen.
Yes.
We're master's students in the games program.
Yeah, there we go. And you have made a game about Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Which is basically what we're going to spend the next hour or so chatting about. Where do we start? How did you get the idea?
Like
what was the inspiration?
Yeah, so it was during the first semester of our program where we had to pitch a game idea if we wanted to in front of the rest of the class. And so you could basically just come up with a little pitch, and then if people liked it and if it got accepted by the teachers, you could just form groups from that and, you know, go and make it. And I had this idea to make a game where you play as someone with Alzheimer's, because it's something I've had close to my life, like on several occasions, and I've always wanted to like deal with that in different ways, artistic, with a different artistic media. And I've done short stories before and tried to like do drawings, and it's been really interesting, but I never felt like I was quite finished with it. And so when I discovered making games, I thought that's a really, really powerful medium to do this, because when it comes to Alzheimer's, we often, you know, hear about it from people who've lost someone to it, or they've experienced others having the disease, right? But it's very different to be in it, and it's very hard to know what it feels like, because, well, at some point they'll lose their language, and they'll also lose their sense of self, so they'll have a hard time explaining how exactly they're experiencing everything. And so we thought, or I thought, it could be interesting to, you know, put a player in the first person perspective of someone with Alzheimer's, get them to just walk around a space, see what it feels like, see how it changes around them as like time goes and the symptoms get worse. And yeah, and so that idea got chosen, and Ryan came up to me among some others, and they were all very interested in the idea. And definitely it wouldn't have been the same game if Ryan hadn't been there, because we really like use each other a lot to all the time ask ourselves, is what we're doing, you know?
And we got into this a little before I turned on the microphone. What were your roles in the you're the artist?
Well,
graphics.
I designer and then artist as well. Like I did all the 3D art and stuff, which was the first time I've ever done that.
Ooh.
So it's not super impressive if you.
You sound like you've been drawing a little 2D before.
Yeah, I mean, I've always liked drawing, so that's always been something
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've always been interested in the visual arts, and I have a bachelor in art history.
There we go.
So yeah, that's a bit of my.
And you took care of the ones and the zeros?
To some extent. I mean, so my role was as a designer on the team. And I suppose that Marlene came in with a concept that was a little bit, you know, like I think we had a good idea of like what we wanted emotionally to happen in the game, but we didn't have any details about what we were executing. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of what my job was initially was just kind of plotting out, okay, what's the sketch for the arc of the game? What's the sort of nitty gritty? What are people doing? Where? How
Could
big
you
is
point
the
point the microphone towards your mouth?
Sure.
There we go.
Yeah.
Much
so.
Better.
The sort of nitty-gritty of what we're doing, you know, what the arc of the game is, like what the interactions are, how do you sort of divide up like sections of the game? What do we mean when we say the symptoms get worse? So like my role as a designer involved really just kind of drafting concepts, which was, I felt very collaborative with Marlene. Like I think that the two of us did a lot of, you know, I would kind of come to her with an idea and she sort of took the creative lead role or kind of a game director role where while she was spending probably most of her like waking hours and sometimes sleeping hours doing a lot of 3D art.
Because I assume that when you study this, you meet in a school group, it can't be the one-to-one same working process as sitting in a studio, like doing the thing, prepping the thing. What I'm trying to say is, were the roles more fluid? Like you had more to do with each other than you would have in a studio where like it's one department and they do the thing.
I think that's normal for any small studio as well. Like you wear a lot of hats usually. I mean, unless maybe if you're a programmer and then designers might not know programming and they might, you know, touch on that.
Yeah.
That's at least the case for me. I mean, I did do a pause menu for the game.
You did do a pause menu.
I did do a pause menu. Nice. It took forever. And it was after the course was done to like just polish up.
Did you have the programmer draw one little thing, then like a little toy horse in the background somewhere?
He actually did some of
the... one art. and then none afterward.
I've done an art!
Well, the problem was for our first prototype, when we just wanted to like have a vague idea of what the space was like, he did a little thing that was supposed to look like a plant, but then no one knew it was a plant. They thought it was a lamp that they had to turn on or something. So
it was extremely low fidelity.
All of a sudden, it doesn't give you anything when you play test it, right? Because people don't know what to do.
Yeah,
so you need something
that's
a bit clearer.
All right. So tell us a little bit about the gameplay, because I've seen some screenshots, which were actually quite telling. Mm-hmm. Like normally you can't see a lot from screenshots, but just I think it was like a point of view, first person point of view. You're sitting overlooking like a classic family dinner, but all of the faces are blurred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like you see people, but no characteristics.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which made like instantly put me in the frame, I believe. Mm-hmm. So walk me through a little, what do you actually do?
Sure.
So the
game is... what we kind of been describing as like a first person exploration game in the vein of other kind of smaller art house games like Gone Home. The sort of like popular term for them, I guess, is walking simulator, which maybe originally was kind of a negative term. And I think now has kind of just become a sort of outright, you know, narrative focused genre for games. And so, it's a game where you play a first person perspective. You're playing an older woman who's walking around her apartment and you do a bunch of kind of relatively mundane daily tasks. You know, you wake up in the morning, there's a coffee maker, you can make yourself a cup of coffee, you have medication on the table, you can take medicine. These are very basic, you know, look toward the thing, press on a button, and then an animation plays of you doing the thing kind of interactions. But over the course of the first maybe 5 minutes of the game, there's a little bit of a moment where you put your coffee cup down on a surface and then you turn back around to go do something else probably. And then when you go back, the coffee cup's not where you left it. And that kind of emulates maybe that feeling of, I thought I put that there, right? That was the intent anyway that we were going for with that. And that was kind of the proof of concept. But then the game kind of unravels from there as you go deeper into it. There's a few different chapters with different narrative moments, such as that dinner you were talking about. And we experiment with this notion of time lapse and emulating the feeling of forgetting in a bunch of different ways, whether that's through the middle of a conversation with family, like at that dinner scene. There's, you know, you'll be asked a question and there'll be sort of like a kind of blink effect. Like we have this, you know, this sort of image of like closed eyes happening really quickly. And then it's clear that time has passed and you didn't perceive the time passing. You're asked a question, you just have to like give an answer, you know, of two options, and you haven't really heard what the person said. So the game puts you in these different situations that were all about trying to capture what it might feel like to feel that slippage happen to you.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's kind of the game sort of set up in that way, where there's these different like chapters and sort of sections where you play through these interactions.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's an in-game boss where you have to choose the lightsaber.
Yeah, that's right. In the third section, you get a big machine gun. And then there's, you know,
then there's a monster representing Alzheimer's.
Yeah. You have to
slash
fight
it down.
The
monster. Yeah. And then you're cured.
Hey!
Yeah, then you're cured. That's how it ends. Right?
Which is so, actually how you cure Alzheimer's.
Yeah,
that is, in fact, we did a lot of research.
Yeah.
So walk me through a little bit more, like the idea. You said you've had it in your life. I'm not going to dig unless you want to share. But talk to me a little bit more about the idea of using games. Like the thing that really turned me on with this subject is, in gaming, we see so much, well, capitalism, basically, right? Mm-hmm. I had a fan of mine write me a joke yesterday. I bought my first official joke, I think.
okay.
A fan of mine wrote me yesterday, shout out to Kasper Kortrup, who wrote, I think EA is an abbreviation of Evil Agenda, and they've just used Electronic Arts to like... He wrote it in Danish. It made sense today. Fucking lot of fun. So I've bought that joke, and I'm gonna give him a ticket to the show where I use the joke. But in gaming, we see so much commercialism, and we see straight up exploitation. Yep. And so it's in theory, when you go big, it's a potential evil business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this seemed like just such a different angle of approaching gaming. We've been mm-hmm. speaking about, we recently did an episode about learning and gaming,
mm-hmm.
the gamification. We had a math teacher who used Civilization for his math, primary student. So I really, really love it when the game industry manages to go beyond how can we make money? Mm-hmm. How can we exploit 11-year-olds? So talk to me a little bit more about that, I guess.
So about where this inspiration comes from?
Yeah, the idea of using games as a tool of good.
Yeah, for sure.
for lack of a better term.
Yeah. Well, we both have, me and Ryan, a background in the humanities, me from art history, him from literature. And I think so we just kind of come in with a different point of view. And I think both of us want to explore this new medium and see what is the potential there and what can you do with it that's so different from everything you see? Because a lot of what you see out there, these big commercial games that you're talking about, they kind of do the same things, or at least I keep seeing the same things. I mean, the very, very original stuff that I see is usually from small indie studios or solo developers, right?
Yeah.
Who actually dare to do something new, because then it's not about money maybe, right? So there isn't as much at stake. And so from the big games, usually you see a lot of the same stuff like violence and combat and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there's not I'm not saying that there's a problem with that. I'm just getting bored, basically. So I think, going into something as different as the experience of Alzheimer's and looking into how can we dissect that and how can we get a feeling out of certain mechanics, I think that's super powerful. Because otherwise, what we've seen is, there are simulations of Alzheimer's out there, some of them just analog, you get some stuff on your ears so you can't hear very well, you get mittens on your hands, you're asked to do some kind of mundane task, right? And it's really hard to do because your sense of your surroundings and everything is kind of distorted. But that doesn't tap into existentially what it feels like, or personally, the emotions.
And you'll always be aware, yes, I can't knit. I'm wearing mittens.
Sure. It's all about the physical stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We can't really simulate forgetfulness. But like Ryan said, we can look into this feeling of, hey, I thought I left something here and I'm kind of unsure about it. Like the space is changing around me, but I'm not sure how exactly. Like that small doubt And I think we all know that experience from, you know, we wake up very early and we're on our way to the bathroom with, you know, our bowl of cereal, like to clean it up. Yeah, we're like, yeah, oh yeah. Shit, I went to the wrong room because I'm a bit tired. I'm a bit distracted. Mm. We kind of take that, you know, to the extreme, right? And see how far we can take that experience.
So yeah. How has the, you've been nominated mm-hmm. for an award. Which award?
So it's the nomination is for Best Student Game, and it's at IGF, so Independent Games Festival, which is happening during GDC. Mm-hmm. And well, GDC is kind of the biggest game developers conference there is, I think. And so we're going to San Francisco in March.
Fuck yes!
Yeah.
Hell yeah. You're a very American, sir.
Yes, I am American.
Where were you? Because that's a, like, saying someone's from Denmark, you go, yeah, you kind of got Jylland or Sjælland to choose from, right?
Sure.
But America's like, I'm American. That can mean a lot of things.
I've actually, I was living in the Bay Area, just south of San Francisco before moving here. So I actually have, you know, folks over there who I will get to kind of introduce my Danish friends to.
Right? Visit Ryan's family and friends and
nice.
Get the big tour.
Nice.
Yeah, it's exciting.
So how has the reception been? It's obviously been good.
Yeah.
Since you, congratulations on the nominations and everything. But talk to me a little bit more about how the world has accepted this game. How has it landed?
It's been honestly way more warm and just... people have loved it so much more than I expected people would. I really like what we make, right? I enjoyed the game when we made it. And I thought that we kind of got at some of the emotional challenges that we were trying to execute. Like, I was proud of that. But I was actually kind of expecting there to be a lot more cynicism, because gaming is something that people tend to be pretty cynical about, right? Mm. Like, I think it's really, really hard to make anything that people consider to be particularly good, especially if you're sort of... I mean, this is the first video game that Marlene and I have made, right? I don't think that we had any expectations of people gravitating toward this all that strongly. But even when we were just showing it to our, you know, students in the program, people were coming up to us and were crying and sharing really personal stuff with us about experiences they've been through. And that was something where we went, wow, okay, that's maybe this is, you know, maybe this has more traction under it than we thought. And maybe it's kind of personal in a way that we hoped it would be, but you can't be a judge of that when you make the thing, right? Yeah, like other people have to be the judge of that. So yeah, we started sending it out because we were encouraged by our teachers basically to just sort
spread
of
it.
Just see if it would be something that maybe could get an award. We were talking, actually, perhaps more importantly than any kind of awards, we were talking originally with the Alzheimer's Society.
Yeah.
Please forgive my Danish. Alzheimer'sforening? Yeah. At all?
Ah, close enough.
Is that at all close?
No. It's okay, perfect. Fine. Like the biggest problem with learning Danish is that the Danes are there's only so many of us, which means that we have agreed upon the one correct
way to say
the things.
Very narrow.
So
window
the
of success.
same second we hear something that isn't completely on, we'll just he doesn't know. I'll switch to English, which makes it like you'll never learn. You'll never learn. We should have done. We'll do it next time I invite you. We're going to do an all Danish thing.
but yeah, like thank you for your forgiveness. Anyway, but yeah, like we sort of collaborated with them while we were making the game, because we wanted to make sure that, you know, we were making something that was kind of artistic and representational and definitely kind of abstract. We wanted to know that it was respectful and accurate in the ways that we were striving for it to be accurate.
So you've actually had them, like, in the course of creating the game, you've been involved with the Alzheimer's.
Yeah, we threw together, I mean, maybe you can speak to this, Marlene, but we threw together a, I guess what we think of as kind of a, in design terms, like a vertical slice. We threw together, like, you know, one, you know, playable 5-minute instance of everything that we knew needed to be in the game.
Yep.
So everything, every system that we needed was implemented, you know, dialogue and such, interactions, the space had art, things like that. And once we had something that was showable, and also maybe kind of early enough in the project to pivot if we felt like we needed to, we took that to Alzheimer'sforening, and they gave us some feedback, and it was really glowing in ways that we didn't really expect. And they gave us some ideas for what to consider about the story of the game. You know, a lot of stories about Alzheimer's end up being very depressing. And mostly what they wanted to focus on was this notion of empathy. Like, it's really important when you're working with all people who, you know, have dementia to be patient and have like a lot of empathy for what they're going through, right? And they sort of saw what we were doing as a way of maybe achieving that. And so they gave us some suggestions for like ways the game could end that we ended up kind of acting on, and like directions to take the story and such. And once we got their blessing, I remember kind of feeling like secure with the direction we were taking the project. And I think that that only further developed as we finished it. And then more and more people kind of talked to us about, or shared comments online about personal experiences they've had with Alzheimer's and such, that the reception was so much more warm than I thought it would be, basically.
I mean, we had a YouTuber pick it up, which is kind of a big deal when you make games. It's like...
Depends on the YouTuber.
Yeah. If it's a big one...
If it's a big one, it's a big deal.
And if it's good, then it feels very much like a stamp of approval, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we all of a sudden we saw all this traffic on our download page, where we have the game, so it's online and it's free for everyone to play.
The game is called Forgotten.
Yes.
Which now 20 minutes in might be a good time to
break that down.
Yeah.
But I'm forgotten.
Yeah, we've made that joke.
The jokes that were happening while we were making this game were wrong.
Yeah. You can find it on itch. But yeah, all of a sudden we saw all this traffic and we didn't understand where it was coming from. And we could see, okay, YouTube, but not a specific link. And me and Ryan are kind of discussing over Messenger, like, what is this? Where's it coming from? And Ryan starts searching, like, on our game, and he's like, Malena, check this out. And yeah, basically it was this video with like a million views. And now it's at 2, actually. That keeps coming new views and new activity. It's been out a year now and people are still commenting.
Oh, that's so cool.
And yeah, and the greatest thing is that like the video is just very, very nice. Like the guy is just very heartwarming, like when he talks about things, taking it very seriously. And all the comments are just, it hits you right in the heart. Like really, like people just sharing their stories. Also, a lot of people wondering where we're from and guessing where we're from and saying, no, they're definitely German because these names in the game, they're German.
but actually they're
Danish. I mean, the game.
but the YouTuber, Corey Kenshin, he has this like dedicated following. He has a couple million subscribers he just sort of plays games that are free on itch, the platform that we uploaded the game to. He just found our game.
It feels like things have kind of escalated from there, I think. Like some people have seen it from there and reached out, and so there's been a lot of good stuff happening like that, like once in a while over the year. So
And now the game is done and done. It's out there.
Yeah.
And you're going to the thing. We wish you the best of luck. What is next? That might be a little early, but I'm curious, like, because it seems to me like you meet in school and you're like, hey, we can do this and we don't have to be tied down by money and expectations and all that shit. We can be properly artistic. Boom, we get this idea. And you do it just for the fuck of it, right? Just for the hell of it. It's because we want to. We have an artistic expression. Like, all right. And now it's gaining traction. The the thing right in front of your noses, in my point of view, would be to make the video game company that makes the hard video games. Mm-hmm. Like, be the ones who talk about incest, rape, cancer, AIDS. If you're really quick, you do a coronavirus game, and that'll fucking... by the time this thing comes out, that'll have blown away again. Right. But like, it seems both that there is a need for this, there are obviously a lot of people in the world that you have touched, doing this, and you've touched them through a medium they did not expect, and maybe a medium that's, as we speak about it, way more powerful for. Spreading empathy, I guess, is your spreading understanding.
Sure, because I guess that the thing that we kind of talk about is that games put you in a role, right? Like they put you in a position, and having, you know, you can develop a lot of, at the very least, sympathy, if not empathy, for other people who you're kind of simulating the role of. Yeah.
Because it seems to me that there would be that there. It just seems like such an untapped And I don't want to say market because that's not the point.
Sure.
It is, but that's not the point.
I mean, we have to survive, of
course.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But, yeah.
It's not the point, but like an untapped opportunity to like, basically everybody in the world will have experienced bullying. Make a game about bullying. I was I was fucking bullied in school.
Right.
If I could have like, if my bullies could have played a game to understand what they made me go through, or I could have played a game to empower me or something like that, or like just like ad-libbing it right here, that it seems like the possibilities are really big. Have you given any thoughts to?
Yeah, I mean, for now, what we've mostly been talking about is kind of just continuing work on Forgotten in some way. Nothing's really settled yet, but we had a lot of ideas during those like only 7 weeks. By the way, we made it in 7 weeks.
It was a small student project.
Yeah, yeah, it's very small. So of
but
course,
that's so cool though.
Yeah,
yeah, but
yeah,
like a small student project can gain this amount of traction.
And obviously, in 7 weeks, you have to really scope it well. And there was a lot of ideas that we had that we just couldn't execute because, of course, we didn't have the time for it. So there's a lot of like other, you could say, like scenarios or scenes or interactions that we thought about that we could make into a bigger game, and then maybe, yeah, maybe earn a bit of money on it as well and survive on the other side when we're done with our studies soon, which is scary. So yeah, but at this point right now, of course, with all the attention, we kind of just want to see where it goes, of course, and get in touch with people, use it for networking as well. And then we've been talking about prototyping these different scenes or interactions kind of separately, seeing how it feels, see if we can put these together to a bigger game at a later point. My dream vision would be to just, you know, start my own company and just work on this, but there's also a lot of logistics, of course, and it's scary, and we don't have the experience to maybe jump into that. Plus, Ryan's going back to the States.
The traitor!
Yeah,
that's right. That's
the real problem. I thought we'd caught him.
No, unfortunately, I will be going back to the States. But we have talked about, nonetheless, like...
Cut off his
even
legs.
After I, even after I go back, we've been talking at the very least about trying to, what we think of as kind of finish Forgotten. Because, like Marlene's saying, you know, there were symptoms of Alzheimer's that we had ideas for how to depict in the game from the same kind of, like, first-personal perspective that we just didn't implement. And we think that this clearly has enough, you know, traction as an idea that we could like build that out and really try to give it legs and let it go as far as we want it to go. And you're not wrong. Like there are plenty of games that attempt to tackle these kind of more emotional subjects. I mean, one of the inspirations for at the very least the visual style of our game is about cancer. It's a small independent game called That Dragon Cancer, which is made by a family of two people, a husband and wife who lost their child to cancer. And it's about that child's, you know, process of getting diagnosed and living out the last few months of his life. So there, you know, I think that gaming is a really rich space to try to tackle these harder issues. And I totally think that we have figured out some great things in our team dynamic between Marlene, Jordi, and I, Jordi being our programmer.
Yeah. Shout out to Jordi, who couldn't be here today.
I think that we have figured out a lot of things for how to kind of capture like the emotional experience of certain kinds of like hard things. And the question is, what do you pick? And we've talked about, broadly speaking, like we'd love to continue making stuff together in some capacity, even after school. And we're thinking, hey, let's start by trying to finish Forgotten and then we'll see what happens from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's this thing called the internet, where you can, even though you're on the other side of the planet, you can still kind
of
talk and work together.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there are a lot of game studios who do that, right? They have, they're scattered all over the globe. But you always have, you know, time differences. And also, there's just something very different in working in the same room altogether, right? Like, I've seen the difference. And, there's something like when you're just sitting next to each other and you all of a sudden you have this idea and you can take that discussion right away, right?
Yeah.
If you hear someone who has misinterpreted something they should do, and you can just kind of like, you know, jump in, stop it before it gets too, bad.
When are you done with your studies?
June, I believe, is
when we're both working on a thesis now, so it's the last semester.
Last semester.
Yeah.
Well, that opens up a lot. Talk to me again. What was the platform called?
So, where you can download the game?
Yeah.
Itch.io.
Yeah.
Itch.io. So it's a place for, I mean, mostly just a lot of free games, just people putting it out there. It's a really good space for just, you know.
Yeah. Tiny independent titles.
Nice.
Yeah,
well, exactly. Shout out to Itch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great platform.
To making it work. How is it, like, it must be fucking weird to, like, be, like, three student friends, oh, we got this idea, our teachers kind of like it, and then all of a sudden, oh, fuck, we're flying halfway across the planet, oh, there's this podcast studio, we're nominated for this thing, can you bear it? Can you tell it? It didn't work as well in English as I thought.
I mean, like, I'm really grateful that, thankfully, through some of our professors, you know, we have some connections of folks that actually know what they're doing with these things, and so we're getting a lot of advice, which is helpful.
So what are the advice you've been getting?
Well, we have not sent out a press release yet, but we should. So that's one thing. Right?
I get that kind of advice. Hey, yeah. You should stop smoking and start eating better. Yes, I should. You should have
exactly right.
Stable sleeping pattern. Yes, I should.
So there's a lot of things like that. That and also just frankly, kind of, I went to GDC once for a job that I worked
GDC?
At a couple. The Game Developers Conference. I went to that conference a couple years ago when I was living in the area for an entirely different reason, not as a maker. And so I kind of know what it's like to walk around on the floor, but I have no idea what it's like to manage a booth in that space. So we're getting advice from folks who have done that kind of thing of like what to expect, what sort of, you know, like have business cards, have this kind of web presence, have these sorts of things, right? So we're sort
of
trying to build
that up. Have booth babes. And I am very willing to step up in a skimpy t-shirt and hot pants. They'll get me
to
the GDC. Oh, don't worry. I've got the hair for it. I can like...
There you go. Shake it out.
I'm still waiting for L'Oreal to call me.
You'll get the call.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. Like you guys will, I assume. This is also something that's putting some spotlight on you as developers.
Yeah.
Is your phone ringing more than it did before?
Well, maybe more the emails. Mm. but I mean, it's just... Yeah, like I said, like ever since that YouTube video, it's been just, you know, once in a while with a sometimes months in between, you get like this, you know, someone asking for an interview or the stuff about GDC. And it's been really nice. And it's interesting just to kind of explore and see where it goes, right?
Talk to me a little bit more about the reception it has gotten with people who are actually involved with Alzheimer's. What did the Alzheimer's training say? What have you heard from, you say, the give us some examples of the YouTube comments?
So Alzheimer's training, we kind of made like a deal with them to make a Danish translation and also like polish it up a bit after we were done with it. And they sent it out to what they call Demensvenner, which is like their sub-organization for everyone basically who wants to know more and wants to know how to like deal with it in their everyday lives. And they made an article about it. And there was actually someone who talked about what they felt about the game. And it was this woman who had experienced it on her own, I think from her dad having it. And she said like she really recognized a lot of the things from the game, like she played it and she thought it was really, really good and kind of made her understand better his position and like how he had felt.
Yeah.
So I think, it's been a lot of that. Like it's been very powerful in that way.
And that's who it's meant for.
Well,
right? It's for people to understand and empathize and
but
get
that's, that's kind of the complicated part because, oh, not complicated, but like we made it as an experiment kind of, right? Like kind of artful like experience of, so how far can we get if we make a game about this? Like what emotions can we convey and so on? And then we've experienced, well, actually, it's a really strong communication tool, you could say, because all these people get all these very strong emotions. And what Alzheimer's training have been saying is, you know, it can really make people more empathetic towards people with the disease. But it's not like we had that in mind from the beginning that, oh, we have this audience or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And on YouTube, what we've seen is what it seems like a lot of young people, you know, in the comments, being very much like writing about their own grandparents and writing like, oh, I want to be more this and that, more attentive towards my grandparent now because so and so. So it's been kind of a surprise, actually, what we discovered was our target audience, like especially these young people who don't really know what's happening to their grandparents and don't really know like what to do about it. That was my own experience
but
with my grandmom. Yeah, who play a lot of games. And I used to, you know, something simple as traversing a 3D space without, you know, knocking into walls because that's how my dad plays it. I mean, that's also like, that's a separate problem, right? For people who don't play games, it can be hard to pick up something as simple as Forgotten. So yeah, mostly young people who have these experiences but don't really know how to tackle it and maybe haven't given much thought to it.
And like, as for people who have had personal experience with Alzheimer's, like in their families or such, I remember that people keep kind of pointing to particular moments in the game that they found, you know, reminiscent of like behavior that they've seen in their grandparent or parent. I remember one of our classmates talked to me about, you know, kind of confided that like their mother has, it has early signs of dementia. And so, there's this moment in the game where you are kind of cleaning up after that dinner scene that we kind of talked about. And so there's, you know, these dirty plates that are on a table and you pick up the plates. And there's one of those blink moments. So these kind of eyelids close over the screen. And when the eyelids open again, you're in the bathroom and you are at a sink, but you're not at a kitchen sink and you have a bunch of plates in your hand. And so you're just kind of wandering through your apartment with these plates in your hand. And when we made that, we were kind of thinking a little bit abstractly about it, like, oh, okay, so this is one way we can like have what kind of makes internal sense of like a disoriented moment of like, if I were in a state where I could kind of fixate on one thing in my head while I'm carrying this thing and I'm thinking about how I need to go do something else, but oh yeah, I need to clean the plates, I might wander into, you know, a bathroom instead of that, right? So that kind of made sense to us abstractly, but then we had people, like this person came up to me later when we showed the game to our classmates and was like, yeah, my mother has been in that position, like wandering through the house with a bunch of plates in her hand. And I'm just like, whoa, okay.
That's really cool.
Okay,
Hitting very close to home. Like, yeah, in a very surreal way, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Because I think games can do that. We had a very, very delicious talk about Life is Strange.
Again,
it's a game where you don't throw fireballs and you don't lightsabers and like machine guns. No, it's an experience carried game, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, point and click narrative game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I love the fact that games can be so much more. I love killing dragons. Don't get me wrong. I'll never stop killing dragons.
Same.
And if the future continues as the past, I will probably never stop playing Total War Warhammer 2 until they give me Total War Warhammer 3. Fuck, I've been caught. Like this last month, I think I've clocked 300 hours on fucking Total War Warhammer 2. But again, I found a YouTuber who does the thing, and now I'm good at the game. So I'll never stop killing the dragons. But it does seem that in the major scope of gaming, there is an untapped potential. And I kind of get the vibe that, well, the games industry is dominated by the major players, and the major players play safe. So, all right, what's the mechanic where you're on an island and you fight the PUBG?
It's
got
right
a game
now.
Mechanic.
Kind of
yeah,
we, like 100 people land on an island. Yeah, and we all know. The last
but
person,
like
right?
that,
yeah.
So that became a big hit. All right, all the other major companies are going, all right, we're going to do our game that's exactly the same. Right?
Sure.
Many shooters. I can't fucking tell them apart anymore. Mm-hmm. The amount of Civilization-ish copies that has been made just because, well, Civilization's older. So I really like it when I see the untapped potential of gaming.
Yeah, I mean,
it's kind of my point, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, like Marlene, you and I talked a lot about this when we were making Forgotten, but we just. I don't know, maybe it's just that we've had other experiences in games that we thought emulated something like this, but we really were like, okay, let's try to make one feeling happen. Like, let's really try to zero in on a few different design techniques, like tangible, actionable techniques, for producing the same kind of emotion in people, which for us was this feeling of losing time or this feeling of I'm a little disoriented. I thought I just did this, but maybe I did this. And whatever kind of emotional reaction you have to that in the context of dementia, we kind of leave that open to the, you know, we can't control people's feelings, right? Ambiguous. But the like interactions that we focused on were things like cutting into the middle of a conversation, you being in the middle of a task where you're putting some maybe plates away or something, and then your sister is sitting in a armchair and you're halfway through a dialogue with her and you turn over and she's there and you didn't see her before, right? So like we were really kind of focusing on all these different strategies for focusing on like one feeling. And to me, that was a really strong perspective to kind of build things from. And I think that maybe that was why, maybe that's sort of the power of some of these like independent games that Marlene and I have gravitated to for inspiration, is that like, I like that, I'll speak for myself, I like that they know how to zero in on one very personal, at least one very personal, you know, feeling in an interaction. And that's part of what I think is maybe this untapped potential we're talking about with what I think is interesting about games, at least.
I mean, a lot of AAA games, you know, they want to make games for everyone, right? They want to hit every kind of player type. So they'll have like all these different gameplays all in one game, all these different mechanics. You can do this and this and this.
Do you have an example?
Well, you know, Red Dead Redemption or Assassin's Creed games. Mm, like
huge system-based
even The
things.
Sims yeah. is becoming more and more like trying to do everything. Like they'll also have a mobile version so they can hit you on the mobile, and they'll also have a Facebook version. Yeah. And, you know, trying to do everything instead of just focusing on what they're, like, what can it actually, like, what is the best thing about that game, right? Like, how can you dive deep into that? So, yeah, like you said, I think a lot of indie games and solo developers also because of scope, like they have to constrain themselves. But that's actually a nice constraint, right? Like you're kind of forced to be really focused, think about what experience you want to deliver, and then it can be really, really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, zeroing in on like reactions and emotional responses to particular interactions. I think that like I've seen a few games that, you know, in the indie scene that have like just really interesting experiments with what it might feel like to have a non-conventional design approach to something. Like right now I'm playing the last act of this great indie point and click game called Kentucky Route Zero, which has been in development for like at least 7 years.
I love that game.
At least.
Shout out to Kentucky Route Zero?
Yeah, maybe more like a decade. And they just released their final
Cut.
Yeah, it sort of came out in like five chapters over the course of like 7 years. And because I guess it was originally Kickstarted, if I remember correctly. But the point is that part of why I like that game is that it's just so weird compared to your average point and click adventure game. Like it's not about playing a role and being and having, you know, a lot of like puzzle logic-y sort of stuff. It's more like a dreamy, you're just kind of like you're in dialogue with a character, and sometimes you're controlling the dialogue of one character and suddenly you're controlling the dialogue of the other without you know, having like an unclear picture of what character you're controlling when. And that could be framed in another game with other people less intentionally as just bad design because maybe it feels unfocused, but the way they execute it ends up being kind of mesmerizing. And I'm interested in that, right? Like they've managed to make these interactions that are totally theoretically, like they're very straightforward to implement, but the way they've executed them in their story and in their world and with their whole aesthetic, which includes kind of art and story and sound and such, together coalesces into this weird, mesmerizing, dreamy feeling. And that's interesting. I want to make stuff like that. How do I make that, right? And so I guess that, yeah, Forgotten was our kind of like way of trying to play with like, okay, how does forgetting feel?
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe what does that say about the emotional reality of someone who is losing their capacity to retain their memories?
While we're sitting here speaking about this, I think about VR. Like if the agenda is immersing yourself in the, in for instance, a like putting yourself in someone else's place. In theory, the world of VR would be, like the immersion would be even more powerful. Could you imagine yourselves, like, I know designing for VR is not the same and it's a completely different, opening it here, like a thought experiment.
Yeah.
Because I could really see you. Like, you know, you reach out with the one thing, but the cup isn't where you just put it. Mm-hmm. If you could reach out and touch the bland faces,
sure,
or the table, or like
if the world had this
even
responsiveness that was more embodied.
Yeah,
in the way that VR affords. Yeah.
My dad is old as fuck. He's from 41, so he just turned he just turned 79. He hasn't got Alzheimer's. But he has got that old man-ness. That just
general curmudgeonness.
General old man-y stuff, right? And I'm trying right now to get him to try VR. All that. I just want to see that old man have that sensation for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that gaming, and maybe not gaming per se, but gamification, that what we can do about that could really be helpful to the elderly as well. Both for entertainment purposes, keeping their brains like working, but also like just sensory experiences. I don't know enough about old people. You look like you're thinking.
Yeah, sorry. Reminding me that literally yesterday somebody on Facebook, added me in a thread. There's a company that's doing something kind of like this. There's a company that's, I think they're, I don't know a lot about them, so I maybe shouldn't shout. I have no idea whether or not this is not like an endorsement. I just know this company exists called Mind VR, with a Y, Mind. And it's interesting. It sounds like that they make VR experiences for folks who are older. Maybe they need memory care. And it's like kind of like what some people might call like a ludotourism. They make virtual environments that you can see in VR that are of places in the world that maybe they went to when they were younger. Sort of a thing about like just, you know, an escapist chance to kind of like remember some things or some places, the feeling of being somewhere. For me, that's part of what VR is good at, is this feeling of being somewhere. I actually kind of think of VR a lot. I'm a little weird because I guess I kind of study games in a way that's weirder than like almost as like a...
How?
Well, there's this niche of academia called game studies, which is kind of like... If there's film development and there's film studies, right? There's people who are making films and there's people who like are treating films like a kind of art form and are looking at them from a humanistic and cultural theoretical lens. And game studies is like an academic niche that does that with lots of interactive media, primarily video games. And so I guess that the way that I think about what games are and what they're good at, when I think about what VR is good at, I think about it being good at putting me in a place. It's almost a kind of sculpture. And I don't actually think of it all that much as something that I would care to make personally, like a more kind of complex classical video game in, even though I've had plenty of fun playing like great VR video games. But I think that the strength of that thing is like, can you make me feel like I am somewhere like tangibly, you know, with how I can very easily pick something up or like walk somewhere else or things like that. So yeah, as for how that might translate to something like what we've made, I don't really know. I think that it just depends. I don't think that VR is a pure like gate to immersion, right? Because immersion is one of those weird words that might mean a few different things depending on how you use it. And so like what I think VR might be good at is making me feel involved in an environment, right? And so that's how I would like think about it if I was going to make something in VR. And I'm not sure if Forgotten is necessarily the thing... I'm not sure if that's even the strength of Forgotten. I think maybe the strength of Forgotten has to do with that time lapse and those interactions, which VR may not necessarily
enhance.
Yeah, like I think it just depends on what you're making, right? There might be ways to redesign something with the same concept, you know, strip everything away, forget the game, forget what we've built, and look more, just go back to that, like, okay, design for this feeling, and then build that in VR. Maybe the kinds of interactions that we make are a lot more embodied. Maybe it has more to do with like physically picking things up and putting them down somewhere else. But I have no idea how it would feel to do the same kind of effect that we did of like kind of clipping time, if you will, and then moving the player to like a different position.
Yeah.
I imagine in VR that would be potent, but I don't know if it would.
Well, I'm not sure that. I'm not sure that. Yeah. I think the reason I thought about it was I saw a one of those cute Facebook clips. You know, you scroll down your wall, you see a cute clip. It was an old guy vegetable, basically, right? Like completely shriveled up, 90 something, sitting completely still, like didn't communicate with his family, friends or caretakers anymore. And then they gave him a pair of headphones with music from the 50s, from when he was young. And you could just see that he, it looked like he woke up. That that there's something in music from his youth, or I saw a similar clip. I don't know why people keep sending me clips of old people, but I guess saw a similar one of a nursing home who had a pet goat, and just seeing these old shriveled vegetables, how they come alive and their shoulders drop and like when they have I used to have goats in the farm when I was young. So I'm just thinking that there must be tools that we are not using that could really, really help some people.
You're probably right.
And the game you have done at least inspired me to have those thoughts. So maybe someone who could actually do something about those thoughts instead of just sitting here blurting it out into the air could pick that up.
I mean, we can try and make Forgotten in VR.
Or something else, right?
Or something else.
But the point is that maybe there's something there to the material of VR that could be
useful. I mean, I haven't done a VR game yet, and it's one of those things on
VR
the list.
VR is not... The most important thing with all of this is that it seems that you guys have... You're not the first ones to do this, but like you've tapped in to making games into more. And I've... As me doing what I do, I really like that. And it seems that when you look at the reception you've gotten out there, and that there's also a space in the community for games that can do more, which I just find really inspiring.
Yeah.
Basically,
yeah.
Good job.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We're super proud and like excited for this opportunity to go to San Francisco and show the game to people that really know what they're talking about, and you know, just generally kind of learn a little bit more from that experience, right? Like, I think that we're all really young in our careers as game developers. All of us want to make games. It's going to be really great for us to get to just chat with people who have the expertise that we've been seeking out, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Do you have any plans?
More
future,
things
for
that
now?
We have need advice on for how to plan for no, but I know that we there
here's
will be
the advice.
Some parties
keep,
and such.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Keep going. Yeah.
I mean, we all just want to make more games together.
True.
And well, we'll have to figure out what that looks like when Brian is gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we've made other games together as well, like just small things at game jams and such. So. Like, yeah, I think we just want to do more of that and experiment with different things. Not necessarily, you know, serious stuff, diseases and such, but also different human experiences that we can...
So you're going to go from Forgotten to Bubble Shooter.
Or relationships.
Yeah, we've half joked, half not. We have not joked. We're considering making a dating simulator from a funny perspective that we're interested in. Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna.
I love the interaction of we've been joking. We have not been joking.
that's how Forgotten got made. No.
Yeah. Yeah,
take that scene, put that in the relationship simulator.
we call ourselves Mutiny Games, which
nice.
Comes from the fact that my like gamer tag is Captain Marley.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, I was known as the captain because I was also the
lead
on the project.
Captain.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so every time I got a bit too demanding or annoying, they would just, you know, declare mutiny.
Declare mutiny
and you know.
Yeah.
Be captain for a bit before I took it back. So
yeah. When I was writing the dialogue for this one scene in Forgotten, I really wanted to end a phone conversation between, you know, you, this older woman, and your daughter, saying, you know, I love you, Mom. And Marlene was like, I don't know about that. That sounds a little strong. That's just you being an American. Americans say love all the time, you know, about whatever.
This game is taking place in Denmark.
Well, Americans,
that's true.
That's Americans true. Say it more.
I'm aware. I'm acutely aware. And I actually wrote that without thinking about that, right? That's just one of those cultural differences that I just didn't think about. And Marlene pointed out to me, and I was like, but I like it. And so I just kind of kept it in.
And now the thing is...
Like just thinking about it, I really love my mom.
Yeah.
Don't remember when I've told her.
No, exactly, yeah. Right? But it, there is something weird about it, especially if you don't say it a lot. And that's the thing, like, you hear it all the time in English, I love you, like, those words you're used to, right? But as soon as you say it in Danish or whatever other language, like, your own language.
Whoa.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds very strong, right? You say it to your partner after enough time with them, right? When it really feels good, it's like, yes.
And when you say I love you, it means I'm going to marry you.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. When you say I love you, that's like, oh,
it's heavy,
shit.
Right?
I understand. I understand that this is just my cultural proclivities.
But the thing is that...
That's actually... I've been hanging out with more and more Americans these last couple of years. And I'm like 50-50 with the... Because Americans seem to spend more time appreciating... than actually having the good time that they're appreciating.
Nice. Yeah.
I know what you mean.
I've been in social situations where American friends of mine have been like, guys, can we just take some time to just slowly appreciate the precious moment we're having here? And I'm like, no, we're having a precious moment.
Yeah.
Let's have the precious moment. And then when we're 80... if we haven't got Alzheimer's, we'll look at each other and go, hey, remember that moment? Yeah, that was cool.
Called out. I
have
been called out. I'm feeling the Danish passive aggression.
So. Yeah, but no, I will flip the coin there, because also, like, there's also, Americans are better at telling people that these people make, like, my American friends give, that I have known for very short amount of time, they give me more compliments than the rest of my friends combined. Like, after, I feel empowered hanging out with Americans. I'm like, yes, I am cool and handsome and beautiful and funny and everything I do is amazing. Yeah, let me go conquer the world. And then I meet my Danish friends who are like, ah, fuck off, shut up, sit down.
They're usually also a bit more outgoing and will more likely, you know, start up a conversation in a bar or something like that.
Yes. Where
Danes can be very kind of shut off. It's like, I have my friends, I'm good.
do a American and Denmark simulator.
Right. Yeah, no, that could be fun. So that could be genuinely fun.
You try to hit on people, you try to talk to people, you go to the gym and you're like, hey, can I borrow this thing, dude?
Yeah, there you go.
Americans stretch in public spaces.
Americans stretch in public spaces. I've been doing that at this chair.
A picture of the, because everybody should stretch more. We just did a very, very good episode about ergonomics, especially those of us who work in a chair. Like, our bodies suck.
Yeah.
They're meant to be running around, climbing trees, all of that stuff. We don't do that.
Word.
Everybody should be stretching all the time. Mm-hmm. But still, so I start hanging out with these Americans, and they'll be like in the middle of a conversation, they'll be like, yeah, man, we can do this. I'm stretching right now for you listening. And on one hand, I'm like, yes, of course, everybody should be free to stretch all the time. It's good for our bodies. It's a cultural thing that we're not doing this. We should change that. And there's still a part of me going, no, don't you know the rules? Stretching and physical exercise is meant for personal space only. You do that alone at home with the blinds off and the lights off.
Good to know that my mental model of, like, internalized Danish repression is
so
accurate.
I will just say this. I don't think I've ever seen Ryan stretch.
You don't think so?
So he's a very unconventional.
Maybe I'm just weird.
We're integrating him.
But he did, you know, when talking about the I love you in Forgotten, he did sneak it in there. So
I did.
Nice.
But I committed mutiny and I just kind of kept it in without telling her.
But the thing is, it's an option. You can decide to say I love you to your mom, or no, your daughter,
worlds.
Or you can, you know, decide to just say bye. You know,
that's right.
So
that's so cool.
So that's there fair.
So that
that's
was
fair.
Funny. Yeah, we have a good dynamic.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have been speaking for an hour, which means that we are kind of nearing the end of this little chat. But I would not end this off without, like, closing it off properly. Is there something, can we tie a bow to everything we've been talking about? Like, kind of sum up? Is there anything you'd like to say before we switch off?
I mean, I'm really grateful to Asamas Flening for being so supportive of us while we were really trying to figure out what we were
making and really
trying, you know, they really seemed emboldened that, like, when we showed them our kind of proof of concept of what the game was, they went, okay, games have influence over people and games are another way of representing things that are complicated. And this is another way for people to feel empathy and
for us
understanding
to get...
toward people who are in difficult situations with dementia, right?
So it's cool how open they've been. And they're all...
Well, you did come to them and say, hey, can we work for free?
True.
Generally a fantastic way
we
to
are
get
students,
good gigs.
Et cetera. But yeah, like...
But yeah, I mean, I think most of the people we talk to there, like, they're at least older than us and not very familiar, I think, with playing games. Like, I don't think they play a lot themselves, but they've had a super open mindset about what it can do. And I think that's super cool. Everyone should be like that, basically. Yeah. I also think we should give a shout out to our two original team members.
Absolutely.
Who worked with us during those 7 weeks and then we kind of split off. But yeah, we couldn't have done it without them either.
Yeah, Daniel and Eben.
So yeah, programmer and our researcher. Mm-hmm. So yeah, making sure we could make something that was, you know, respectful and correct.
No, that's so cool.
Yeah.
The platform is called Itch.
Itch.io.
Itch.io.
If you go to the website and you search Forgotten, it will come up.
I think
it's just there free of charge.
Yep.
So yeah. How many hours of gameplay?
Less than an hour.
Less than an hour.
Yeah, it's 20 minutes to half an hour.
Yeah.
Depending on, you know, how slow, how much time you're taking.
Yeah. So there's the shout out, everybody. Get to itch.io and download Forgotten and take your time playing it.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah.
And tell us if you like it.
Yeah, how do people find you?
Well, you can leave a comment on the page, actually. So,
please leave a comment. Check the all the YouTube videos that says Forgotten in it. We need some clicks and some views up there. And while we're at it, why not go ahead and smash that like button on the Facebooks for Aldrig AFK. It is the easiest way to get in contact with me if you have ris ros. I have no idea.
Rice and roses. Yes.
If you have rice and or roses to the podcast, then you can push Facebook knap and talk to us. And if you care to throw some stars at us and give us something, it makes the algorithm like us a lot. And while you're on Facebook, why not give Nils Forsberg's comedy page a cheeky little like? I will be touring the country with my new show, Dumb Jokes and Dragons. Yes, thank you very much. During 2020, and I'll be spamming you once I get where I know. And in that show will probably be the joke. I think EA stands for Evil Agenda, but they just said Electronic Arts to cover shit up.
But now you told everyone the joke.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. It does. Well, I've told everyone. I've told everyone who listens to this.
Everyone will be we've heard that one already.
I've heard all that. Well, that's the thing. I don't have my...
It's all on the execution.
Yeah. It's all in the delivery. And people who listen to this podcast are used to hearing the same jokes all over and over again. Have I told you guys about the time Monte Carlo stole my PlayStation? I think I told that too much. Anyways, I cannot do an episode of this wonderful podcast without giving a massive shout out to all the wonderful, wonderful, wonderful people who support us at tier.dk. You are the guys making this happen. Thank you so much. If it weren't for you, I probably wouldn't keep doing this. So, thank you much for listening. And I think we're like 6 likes off hitting the 1,000 on Facebook. So please do the thing, push the button, and let me know before I get the right idea and go, you better push the freaking out control.
Oh God, I just thought of that.
If you're ready for me, then. I wish I knew how to fade out.
Yeah, I have a friend who literally thinks that's the worst song ever written. Oh. Ever.
Well, it isn't the worst song, but...
No.
No.
Oh, we're going into a long discussion now. Oh, sorry.
No, because that's the thing. I'm hovering my finger on the stop button over here. We're still recording.
All right. Sing it out.
The worst song in the world. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, beep, 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 party every day, pa, 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 party every day. Did you just rhyme party every day with party every day? The Black Eyed Peas, I Got a Feeling, is the worst song the world has ever seen.
It's pretty bad.
It's pretty bad. Actually, but we're still recording. I'll put this in the end. But I've discovered, it's very new, I've discovered how to listen to the Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah, how?
Don't.
don't.
No, go back. Back in time. It used to be pretty good.
No, but don't is the point, because the Black Eyed Peas is kind of well produced, which means that if you have it at a party or as some background music, or like the beats are nice, it's well produced. The secret to listening to the Black Eyed Peas is don't listen. Never pay attention. You will boil your mind.
Just have it on.
Just have it on.
Nebulously at a party in your sphere of living. Yeah.
And that'll work. And if you lack something nice for your ears to have in your spheres, please pay attention the next time we once again are never AFK.
Olivia My, hvad laver du?
Okay.
Nej, hvor er det flot. Og så med på mors nye køkkenlåger.
IKEA, Danmarks mest rummelige køkkener.